This is Chris Champagne. This is my new interview show, and on WAMF FM 90.3, New Orleans. We have a special musical guest today, the great Kelsey Wilburn, who I will, with her permission, I will call her Kelsey or Kelsey May the rest of the interview. Is that okay? That
sounds wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we're going to talk about your new band extensively. But first, I want to just get a little background for some of the people who may not be familiar with you.
Okay.
You're from Shreveport, right?
Originally born in Shreveport, yeah.
How long have you been in New Orleans?
I've been in New Orleans. This would make 17 years.
Wow.
Just over 17 years.
Well, that's a while.
It is a while.
Yeah.
This is home now.
Well, you're married now and settled.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could. I mean, I'm I've been to your house. I know. I did research. And so why did you move to New Orleans? I mean, maybe that's a stupid question since you're a musician, but nonetheless, I'm going to ask it.
It's an easy answer. I moved here to leave Shreveport.
Okay.
Well. No, I went to college at Loyola University for my undergrad.
Oh, okay.
And Loyola was the catalyst.
All right. Well, how did you like Loyola?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a really large high school in Shreveport that was kind of like a precursor to like an LSU type experience. And
yeah.
And Loyola was kind of the opposite, which is what I needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I've had some friends that are going to Loyola for music, and they speak highly of it as well, and for other things as well. So, well, that's great. And I'm glad that Loyola lured you here. You sound like my mother. My mother grew up in Mandeville, and I asked her one day, late in her life, when did she leave Mandeville? And she said, as soon as I could.
Yeah.
Of course, in those days, only had like 7 people in Mandeville.
Oh, wow.
It's not like it is now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, you have a new project, a new band. So
correct.
Why don't you tell us about it? It's called Evermore Nest.
Yeah, Evermore Nest. So I've been playing locally for probably the last 10 years or so under the name Kelsey May. And so people might be familiar with that, seeing that name around. But with this new record that I made, I just kind of wanted a change and a fresh start, and decided to go with the name Evermore Nest.
You want to mention some of the musicians that were played on this?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Nielsen, who produced it, he also played the drums and percussion. And we had Will Kimbrough, as I mentioned, on the lead guitar and banjo, mandolin, piano. The other songs, the lead guitar on the other songs is by Kenny Hudson, and he is a fabulous pedal steel player, slide player, and guitar player. And we had Dean Merrill on bass guitar, and Eamon McLaughlin on violin and viola. He's he's the staff fiddler for the Grand Ole Opry, which is pretty cool. And he also plays with Emmylou Harris quite a bit. Josh Britt from Orphan Brigade on the banjo. And I have to give a shout out to Dylan Aldridge. He recorded the album at his studio there in East Nashville, but he's from Past Christian, so he's a local boy too. And it was nice being with a bunch of, you know.
Yeah, homeboys.
Homeboys, yeah.
Homeboys, homegirls.
Yeah.
How long were you in Nashville to do this?
We did the whole recording in 1 week. And it was...
Well, you were prepared. I mean, obviously, you didn't just go up there and...
I didn't know. I mean, I was hoping for the best. Obviously, I didn't know the musicians, and I barely knew Nielsen. And so, like I said, it was a bit of a leap of faith for me, because I'm kind of a control freak. You know, probably type A, you might say. So so it was a lot for me to hand over the reins, but I'm so glad that I did. But we recorded the week of the total eclipse. That was August, I guess, 21st, I believe, 2017.
So it was dark some of the time.
It was for 2 minutes.
Okay.
At 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was 2 minutes.
It was bizarre. I mean, we took a break because it was the first day of recording. And we all went out, because Nashville was in that line of totality, as they called it, across the United States.
Okay, yeah.
So it actually got really dark.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most bizarre experiences of my life. The birds were, like, they're freaking out. And
I was so strange. I was driving through Texas, actually, and some birds tried to jump into my car.
Yeah, they didn't know what was going on.
No, but my windows were up, and I mean, I felt bad about it, because it was like the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah. dumb birds.
Well, my experience was fortunately a little different from yours, but it was kind of magical too, and it felt like the stars were aligned a bit, you know, as you could say.
Yeah.
Over the project, and that was one of those moments where I felt everything coming together, and thought, okay, this was what I was supposed to be doing and where I'm supposed to be doing it.
Well, I think that if there is such a thing as doing what you're supposed to be doing, I think that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing because you do it so well.
Well, thank you.
And you're also a very generous and magical soul, I think. So I just want to let you know. No, you are. You're very kind. You've always been kind to me and gracious, so I appreciate that. And that's worth more to me than any other thing. It's like, you know, people, you know, when you meander in the art world, you know, people talk about, you know, how do you separate the artists from the art? Well, you kind of don't, okay? If you're me. Uh-huh. In other words, if like, say, if I met Shakespeare,
right?
Okay, so he became a friend. He started hanging around the scene, and he was like a complete and utter ass. Okay, I mean, he could go.
That would color your opinion of Hamlet.
It would color my opinion of him. He could go jump in a lake.
I see.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
but you'd still like Hamlet.
Well, if I liked Hamlet before, I would probably still like it. Yes. Okay.
Tell me how you really feel.
But I was about to say, you're a type A person.
Uh-huh.
I'm at least a triple A.
I understand.
Yeah. So I got that going for me. You know, I mean, I do have that intensity. Which kind of amazes me, actually, because I was always really a shy, quiet child, you know, timid, mm-hmm. you know, and when you get to be an adult, you know, people will describe you to yourself in ways that you think are just like foreign,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
and because I mean, I always thought, you know, which is probably true, that anything I could do is worthless. You know what I mean? So to think that I could even do anything that anybody would care about is
right.
pretty amazing. But to think that I could be intense is like, you know, what do you mean? You know what I mean? But I guess I am, I guess. I don't know. I got that going for
me. Well, to me, it sounds like you found yourself. You found the real Chris.
Well, you know.
And I'm thankful for that.
Well, I appreciate it, okay.
I like the intensity.
Well, you know, I try to do the best I can, you know. I need to try harder, but this interview is becoming more about me than I wanted it to be. But so I apologize for that. So,
don't.
Wow. So we're with Kelsey May here on Juniat. Oh, I forgot. I'm supposed to say this is WAMF FM 90.3 in New Orleans. I always forget that part. The middle.
Can't forget that.
I get carried away with these my great guests, and I've had some great guests, and this is certainly no exception to that. What's the name of your previous? CD.
So Kelsey May, spelled KelCyMae, and then the previous CD is Half Light, the one with King of Tennessee.
Okay.
And the new one, our new artist name, so you'd be looking for me as Evermore Nest now, not Kelsey May, but this is the place that you call home.
All right. Evermore Nest, the place that you call home. Kelsey May's new project, new CD.
Right off your back, I wanted. glasses, your scarf, your pride, and even your laugh. I open it hoping I've sorted dystopia remains, despised and intact. Sorry to say, I love you that way.
How many songs didn't make the cut? But there are some songs that you are still working on, or perhaps because I know that sometimes if I have a book of poems, let's say there'll be some that won't get in, obviously, right. And because of those rotten editors, mm-hmm. But you can revisit them, you can change right. them, obviously.
There was a handful that we chose not to record, and there was one that we recorded that did not. That didn't make it on here. And it just didn't feel right to me. I do still love the song and intend to
work on it.
But well, I just think we didn't go about it the right way.
There was something I did want to ask you about this as well. I mean, how has the music industry from your, as an artist changed? I mean, lately, and what's the future, you think, of it? I mean, in other words, before, you didn't have the download, the electronic part where you could just scoop it off the air. Mm-hmm. You had to kind of buy a product, and you don't have to do that so much anymore. So I mean, it's had a pretty much significant impact on musicians.
I don't know if you want my opinion or my thoughts on the music industry.
All right.
It's pretty bleak.
Okay. All right. Well, that's up to you. That's up to you.
It is very difficult in this country for someone who writes music, plays music, to make a living, and it's getting worse by the day. At Americana Fest, I went to a panel.
Is Belgium
that Mary Gaucher was on, and a handful of people from the industry, and it was about the Music Modernization Act, which just passed passed all of Congress, and the president signed it. But it's incremental change. It's a start.
What is the crux of that of the bill?
It's supposed to. There's like two different components of it. I want to say one component is about music makers prior. So the copyright law is kind of weird, and it only affects music made after a certain date, 1972, maybe. It doesn't apply to me, so I don't remember the exact date. But people who made music before a certain year don't have the same ability to collect royalties. So it's supposed to change that for those people and their heirs. And then it's supposed to change the way royalties are made, the percentage that artists or songwriters receive from from certain public performances, but it's there's a lot left to be desired in that regard. And since people don't pay for music anymore, like, you might say, oh, I subscribe to Spotify and you might pay $10 a month, but artists don't really see anything. Spotify is not a profitable company, and therefore they're not paying out money to artists in the way that they need to. So artists now have to tour constantly, and they have to sell t-shirts and hats and jackets and stickers and whatever, because it's extremely difficult to make any money other than just playing a show. And in New Orleans, you know, there's half the shows you go to are free, and so then it's, you know, it's it's just that's why I said it's bleak in my opinion. I am hopeful, and I hope that the Music Modernization Act starts a movement towards making sure that artists are compensated fairly. In other countries, they are.
We really
struggle with it here.
Wait, so in other words, it's subsidized by the countries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That
was my question. I mean, like for instance, I mean, you must know something about this, I guess. What an example, say, Belgium or France.
France, I know for sure.
Okay, well, France. What happens in France?
Well, I don't know.
Well, if you don't know.
I don't know it. I don't have. I can't speak very eloquently about it. I don't know all the details.
But
I do know that musicians there are given a cultural stipend.
Okay. All right.
You know.
Well, that's certainly different.
Yeah.
But
well, because they realize it's valuable.
Yeah. I get it. Okay. And I have to sell like loose screws at my that have my trademark on them. You know. So
I love it.
I should try that, I guess.
Yeah.
And now, if I'm not mistaken, our Senator John Kennedy was helpful with this legislation. Am I right? Or is that wrong?
I don't know.
I think so. I think he actually. I think he was instrumental in.
Very bipartisan.
I think he was one of the senators, the Republican senators, that really kind of went to bat for this. Yeah. So, but
fortunately, everybody could rally around the idea. So.
Oh yeah. Well, no. Well, you know. Well, I mean,
I think Sirius XM was, only company that fought it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Artists in general, performing artists in general, I think I don't think that the rank and file citizen really appreciates it, which is really where the problem lies. I mean,
I don't know if it's about appreciation or if it's about just lack of knowledge about, you know, how much of a struggle it really is for someone who's an artist to create.
Well, they probably don't think about it. I mean, about other people in that sense. I mean, obviously some do, because I mean, there are people that come to our shows that you can tell that they get it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they buy the CDs and they'll, you know, first of all, they came to the show.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one thing. But New Orleans is really bad about that, though. It just is. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you know, New Orleans, if you want to... no matter what your art form is, let's say your art form is somehow taking carburetors off of a Ford and doing some kind of a musical thing with it, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you say to New Orleans, I'm going to come down here and I'm going to blow air into this carburetor and make music. And they'll say, sure, absolutely, come down immediately. But then when you do it, and it's the greatest thing in the history of Earth, they'll never go see you. Or if they do go see you, they won't pay. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So they love artists, except they don't want to pay.
Yeah.
It's around here.
Yeah.
I mean, because I found when I go someplace else, depending on where it is, it's not the same. I mean, that's too bad. You know, and I can say what I want about New Orleans.
Right. Well, I do know that a lot of New Orleans artists spend part of the year touring in Europe. Because in Europe, people have a different value system.
Right. Well, I'm not allowed in Europe, so I don't know. But... There's a squadron of helicopters that hovers.
I love it.
About 10 miles west of Ireland.
Okay.
And they're only things to keep me away.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So, but it's a job. I keep some people in job that way. So, anyway, any last thoughts? I think I don't know if we've covered
a lot of subjects.
Yes, we have, and as well we should.
She doesn't see you like she used to. Not a problem to solve, nor an answer she can cling to. She burns the midnight oil in the form of light from her computer screen. An empty glass in the morning, last night's ice, now a solid white rain. She hates being kissed on the head. She scrunches her eyes and her shoulders and says, I'm doing fine right here. And I'll be even better this time next year. She doesn't hear you like she used to. You either mumble now, or there's a wall you can't get through. In your dreams you can't move or speak, and you feel you are dreaming now. Your muscles stunned and responses weak. You wanna talk, but you aren't sure how. Grab her arm by the wrist and run until you can't stop. Grab her arm by the wrist and run until you can't stop. She hates being told what to do. There's a fire in her eyes and you see it burning too. She hates being told what to do. Sees red through her eyes, and you see it burning too. She says, I'm doing fine right here. And I'll be even better this time next year. Oh, I'm doing fine right here. And I'll be even better this time next year.
Probably. Thanks for having me on your show.
No, Kelsey, thank you for taking the time out to do this. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
okay?
I'm excited for this new radio station.
And well, thank you. Yeah, oh, that's good. Thank you for reminding me. WAMF FM 90.3 in New Orleans. You listen to Chewing a Yacht with Chris Champagne and the great Kelsey May, and you and Lucy are two of my favorite people.
Oh, you're sweet to say that.
So I appreciate it.
And, well, you and Lucy are two of my favorite people.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Okay, I know that's half right. So thank you so much, Kelsey. And again, tell us when you're going to be, where you're going to be Friday.
Friday, catch Evermore Nest at Chickiwawa at 8 o'clock with Kristen Diablo, and she'll have her band as well. It'll be a fun night.
It will be. And I guess on Friday, I'm going to be at, if you can't go there, I'm going to be at the Little Gem Saloon.
Oh,
I'm seeing Calico Club Cabaret.
There you go.
So come out and see me and watch that art.
Yeah.
All right.
Support art.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Thank you.
We're going to end today's show with some great music by Evermore Nest, and my friend Kelsey May is the leader of this group. We're going to play a couple of songs from their new CD, which you can get at Louisiana Music Factory and at Euclid Music and online, of course. Evermore Nest, the place that you call home. And the songs are going to be North Mississippi and Major Tom. Take it away, Kelsey May and Evermore Nest.
Down south in North Mississippi, they have tall, skinny trees that straddle the edges of bridges, resembling your knees. And I can't stop thinking about the choices that we made and how welcome you felt, how welcome you felt back at our old sunset to my left. I keep driving north, settled and restless. Storm beat me to it. Must have passed recently. All the trees that scatter the ground are still holding on to green leaves. And what a shame to only see the spring for just a moment before the wind rushes through. The wind rushes through, leaving you fallen and broken to. Keep driving north, settled and full of guilt. Mississippi, they have tall, skinny trees that straddle the edges of bridges, resembling your knees. Sometimes we listen when we pray. Sometimes we don't have words to say. They say God speaks in mysterious ways. I just shut my mouth and watch the ocean wave. Your lips are cruel when they kiss. I work my way like Sisyphus. But you rule this rock with an iron fist. It don't matter much to me, I kinda like it like this. I know nothing but what I know. This world done lost me a long time ago. I feel like Major Tom. I feel like Major Tom, out of control. So I search the stars for a sign. I'm asking questions all the time. But this world, it's a circle, no it ain't no lie. And I'm back where I started, but I'm doing alright. Yeah, I'm back where I started, but I'm doing alright. I might be where I started, but I'm doing all right. I know nothing but what I know. These words that lost me a long time ago. I feel like Major Tom. Major Tom, out of control. I know nothing but what I know. This world that lost me long time ago. I feel like Major Tom. I feel like Major Tom, letting go, letting go, letting go.
Today we have Philip Melosar, great cabaret performer, man about town, great guy. Hey, Phil.
Hey there.
How you doing today?
I'm doing fine, babe. Where you at?
All right. I'm right here. I'm chewing it at, too. Well, you know, we're here in the, we have a portable recording situation, and we're at the lovely Neutral Ground Coffee House, so I don't want to forget to mention that, because that's
Thank you.
That's close to your heart. And your,
Indeed. So,
why don't you tell us something first of all? Let's start off with, how did you start as on your way to being a piano bar player, cabaret player? How would you describe yourself? I mean, if you had to, in a,
you know, that's always difficult to do. Yeah. You know, a guy told me many years ago, you know, you're an entertainer, and so I was kind of like that idea. But I'm a self-taught piano player. When I turned 30, I was working on another degree as a school teacher, and I went and bought a piano when I got the degree. So, and I started banging on it. And then I'll say about, 10 years later, I felt all right about things. And I went out and started hustling little gigs, you know. Played at the Mediterranean Cafe right there at the old Morning Call. And,
oh, wow.
And played at a beignet place out in Harahan and things like that, you know.
So beignets are very important to your career.
Oh, beignets are very important to my career.
Well, by now, you've played so many varied venues.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you played...
That's not
everywhere.
Uncommon, though. You know.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So many musicians.
It's you have to move on before they get wise.
No. It's good to have somebody watching your back and all these things.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is true though. When they ask you, you know, how do you describe yourself? I had the same problem. I mean, you know, the best thing I could come up with is I'm a broken rhinoceros in Laurence Olivier's body. And that's not quite it either.
The horns are very valuable.
Yeah, they are. Listen. Whenever I see people from certain countries, I have to get out. I have to move. You'd be surprised how many times I've left my meal half eaten. Okay, because of that.
That's okay. You got thick skin.
Well, listen. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Listen. What are you up to now? Exactly. Now, do you have any new plans or old plans?
You know what I do. We just mentioned that. For my piano playing that I just left the Standard over there in Magazine, and I got a couple of irons in the fire, who knows which ones are which will work out. Certainly, I'm at the Superior on St. Charles and Superior Seafood and St. Charles and Napoleon, and there's another good possibility of somewhere. I just mentioned that Charles Aznavour died, but this is kind of what I do. I would do shows, these cabaret shows, and I'd always do them only on people who have died.
Okay.
So several years ago...
So you've been waiting for this moment.
Several years ago, I turned on the computer, and my news page comes up, and it says, Paul Simon died. And I said, oh, yeah! And then I scrolled down. It was Paul Simon, the senator from Indiana.
From Illinois, yeah. The guy with the bow tie.
Ruined my day. Yeah, so shame on me.
Well, you know, those shows that you did of songwriters, I saw many of them at the Mid-City Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another great lamented venue. and they're just great. And, of course, the last one you did with your lovely wife,
Dusty Springfield show.
Yeah,
it was good. Yeah, enjoyed that.
It was, yeah. Are you doing anything like that soon, do you think? I mean, similar to that? I mean,
you know, I have a couple. First of all, like I said, Aznavour just died. And we had done an Aznavour show before, so that might be easy to pull up. Maybe I can just pull it here at the coffee house. I've been thinking with my friend Larry Baron. He mentioned to me Alan Sherman.
Okay,
So I started looking up some of his material again, and we're having fun with that. We're also, of course, a couple people are interested in Christmas shows, and so...
Yeah. Well, Alan Sherman would be pretty funny, actually.
Because
it's something that's a little, somewhat maybe obscure to some of our younger folks, but still, I'm sure there are a lot of interesting ditties that he came up with that probably have some staying power as far as, I guess things stay the same in some sense, at least societally.
And you know what else is interesting about Sherman is that, you know, he's a New York Jew, and his dialect, it fits well with the New Orleans, with the New Orleans dialect, and so we can have fun with that.
Sure,
kind of
hello
stuff
mother,
too.
Hello father.
Yeah, and a lot of his stuff are similar in that vein, you know.
That'll be great. Yeah,
could be fun,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Neutral Ground. I mean, it's open every day, right?
Yes, every night,
and it's open. So what time? About seven.
Seven until 12 or 1.
Describe it for people who don't know about it. Remind the people who do know about it who haven't been in a while.
Sure. Well, this is the old Penny Post Coffee House, prior to that, it was the Red Lion Bar. They cut it in half, and they made two coffee houses. We were on one side of the Penny Post, and the other side was Bob Barsotti's place. Barsotti did theater and poetry, and we specialized in music. The Penny Post was a true co-op in this whole place. And anybody that walked in paid $25. You owned it, an equal share of it for a year. And then when I took it over, I'm in charge of it now. So, again, what we do is we specialize in music. It's an old-style coffee house, only open at night. It's free to come in. Every night you have 3 to 5 acts performing. Everybody performs for basically an hour. And who knows what you're going to get. Some of the acts are fabulous. Some of the acts, you can't wait till the next one comes on.
Yeah.
We don't serve any alcohol. So, you know, families are welcome and certainly come in. And I think, I mean, some of the fascinating things about it is that I think it's the oldest coffee house south of New York.
Really?
Of a coffee house. Again, not a coffee shop.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And it's also we book more acts than anybody in the country.
Yeah, well, I thought that was I was going to mention that if you didn't say that. Yeah. Well, you know, I come here quite a bit. I sit in the back and I write sometimes, and it's because there's comfortable chairs and different places to sit around. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I think that most of the acts are above average. I mean, really and truly. And sometimes, and often, you really get some spectacular people.
Exactly.
But most of the time, it's above average, I think. There's lots of, I mean, you know, there's just lots of talent out here. I mean, they're just
not only here, people. Know?
They come through.
They come through. That's right. They can make their little tours, and they contact me months ahead of time.
Right. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, I was going to, in a minute, we're going to go over by the piano. You can play a few things for us if you don't mind.
Sure, I'll be happy to.
You know, one of the things I remember is I came in here one night to do, like I just said, I was sitting there writing, and you happened to be there, have the hour, and you sat at the piano. And this is kind of before, you know, we've become relatively close friends, I hope, the last couple of years, but this is kind of a little bit before that. You know, we knew each other, but we hadn't really hung around on any personal basis or anything like that. We hadn't done any shows, I don't think, together at that time. And you happened to be in here. And it was the best thing I think I've ever seen here. I mean, you sat at that piano and you did like standards, old mm-hmm. standards, and you did story, like background stories about them.
Yeah.
And it was really a great surprise and just really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So
I always liked that. I always liked to be able to go from some comedy things I do, some I picked up from old friend Sam Adams,
right.
of course, and some of the things I wrote, but also to be able to mix that up with the old standards. When I started playing, I was 30. That's when I started. I got my piano, so I was 40 years old before I was able to do anything, really. And I realized my rock and roll days were kind of over, and I kind of specialized on those old songs.
Well, you do some rock and roll in your, you know, when you do your cabaret, like when you
do it.
Yeah,
until it starts to hurt.
Well, you know, before we go, I jumped ahead of myself a little bit. Before we go to the piano, I wanted to ask a little bit more about the creation part of your career, because I've just been doing this show for like maybe 2 months now,
mm-hmm.
and I've interviewed, you know, a handful of people, and I've talked to some of them about you know, the beginning of how they got started doing different things, mm-hmm. and the things that they're known for now, and I think every one of them has really surprised me, and I think anyone who actually has heard of these people and know these people who listened are probably pretty surprised as well about how it happened. So
I
think that the fact that you just started when you were 30, I think would be a surprise to many people that don't know.
Right.
And you say it took you 10 years before you really felt comfortable, that, I mean, to a great degree.
Yeah, pretty much so. And I was playing a little guitar before then, you know, I could strum it.
Uh-huh.
But,
you know. And now, I mean, you're really, you know, an iconic figure here, I think, you know, for your work that you've done. I mean, you know.
I'm getting old, that happens.
Well, there's a lot of people who are old who aren't iconic. If you want to see it, let's just go outside and wait a minute. So don't be so, but you know, and Philip and I have worked together,
mm-hmm.
Thankfully for me, and done some comedy shows, and he's done, you know, parody songs about current events generally and political figures, and he's just incredible at it. You're just incredible at it. You're just, you know, a very intelligent guy, and you have a good ear for not only music but for just the tone of what you're trying to get across in those things. So it's really been a pleasure to do that, and an honor actually to do that with you, to be quite frank.
Thank you, bro.
So that's true. And well, anyway, let's go over to the piano for a minute here and see what we got. All right,
gotcha.
Well, we're over here now at the Neutral Ground Coffee House with Philip Melanson by the piano, and we're gonna play a few. He's gonna play a few tunes for us. Now, I don't know where we should start, but one of the stories that you tell, either sitting around a bar when we're sitting around a bar after the show or during your shows, is that the song by the Vice President of the United States.
Oh yeah,
can you do that one?
Sure. Yeah, Charles Dawes. He was Vice President under Calvin Coolidge. He was a guy from Chicago area. Turn of the century. He obviously has a musical training, and he wrote a little melody, and it was called Theme in A. And well, anyway, he became an adult and got into the banking business, and then he got into politics. And then later on, every time he would jump up on the platform, he would they'd play a little theme for him. Well, anyway, the guy becomes vice president with Calvin Coolidge. And 10 years later, Mr. Dawes wins the Nobel Prize for economics. And then 10 years after that, or whatever it was, he died. Carl Sigmund, who had his birthday last Monday, found that melody and put it to music. Put it to put some his lyrics to Mr. Dawes's lyrics, Mr. Dawes's music, excuse me. And it's one of the great, love songs of all time. Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in that wonderful game that we know as love. You'll have words with him, and your future's looking dim, but your love will rise above. Once in a while he will call, but it's all in the game. Soon he'll be there at your side with a sweet bouquet. And he'll kiss your lips and caress your waiting fingertips, and your heart will fly away. You thought that Al Gore was the only creative vice president we had, huh?
Well, that's right.
No.
Well, you know,
Mr. Dawes.
Not many people know that Mike Pence and Joe Biden are at this very moment.
They're putting on a cabaret show.
They're trying to get together and write a song, okay? To bring us all together. That's right. That's Charles Dawes' greatest hits.
I think so. I think it might be his only hit.
Now, here's a trivia question for you, which you probably could answer at now, because you might be the only person that could answer this question. Who were the only two people ever to have hits on the top 40 charts and win the Nobel Prize?
Dylan.
Yeah, Bob Dylan.
And win the Nobel Prize. Oh, and Mr. Charles Dawes.
Charles Dawes, yeah. Now, who are the only two members of Congress to be elected to Congress and have top 40 hits?
Well, that would be Sonny Bono.
Yes.
And the other one would be, now the other one would have to be the guy who was on the Love Boat, wasn't he?
No, he didn't have a song.
Oh, he didn't have a song, no, huh?
Charles Dawes.
Was he elected to Congress?
Yeah, he's a congressman too, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, see, he's okay, a very talented guy.
Yeah.
He was
from his roots.
He was a field goal kicker too. Cleveland Browns tried to sign him, but he was been dead for 40 years.
I think they got him.
Yeah. They had him for the first game against the Saints.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you want to play I know that Sam Adams was a mentor of yours. Is that correct?
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately, he just left us maybe about a year ago.
Yeah, and sure did.
And he was a great cabaret performer for sure, legendary cabaret performer.
Sure was, yeah.
And you want to do the Tulane song?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Right.
Okay. Old Sam, man. What a treat.
You have a story about Sam before you start? Or?
My gosh, let's see. Which one should I tell about Sam? Sam was the kind of guy who was... He was kind of truculent about getting him to do certain things, but after he signed on, he was there. Yeah. So we're getting ready to do the show, and he's in his girlfriend's car, and he totals the car. Sam is about 70 years old. The boy's late 60s. Totals the car. He shows up for the show. He did it on Saturday. He showed up for the show on Sunday. We get to do the show. They had just come out with Viagra. I'm working that night at the Pontchartrain, that Saturday night. The guy comes to me and says, "Hey, would you like one of these, Phil?" And he shows it to me, and I know what it is. I saw the advertisement, and I said, "No, man, I don't need that stuff."
Yeah.
But then I think, actually, I could use it, you know, if you don't mind. So the guy gives me the Viagra pill, and I take it the next night to Sam. I put it in a little box, I give it to him. And at some point in the show, we're doing this song, one of his parodies. I found my thrill with the Viagra pill.
don't go too far into this, but so it was fun. And so I said, Sam, and I have a little gift for you, you know, to commemorate this moment of moment together. The place is, the columns is packed, and Sam gets up. I'll never forget. He said, "Ooh, thank God for let me stand up. I was growing a taproot." And he comes up to the piano, and I say, here's a little something for you, Sam." And he unties a little knot and he pulls it out and he sees that pill, and as soon as he sees the pill, he pops it in his mouth. Thank God we were almost finished the show.
Yeah, you're right.
But he was a screamer. Sam was, he was just full of energy and just, he was just full of energy. And I mean, right up to the end, that guy was he was a real joy. And even though he was a personality, he was, you know, he was, he really loved people, you know, and he was always a pleasure to be with.
Yeah.
You know, one guy, you never forgot it, you know?
Right.
And this was one of his great numbers. I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue. I ended up around Norco. I tried six times, but the traffic fines, they seemed to interrupt my cash flow. From the CBD on out to Metairie, a left turn that just had a beat. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue. I passed up Kenna easily. Seems that everywhere I look, I saw this new left turn sign. And so I just kept going straight. And then the two-lane became the airline. I started figuring I'm getting home late. Well, I kept my indicator blinking, hoping that a left turn might soon appear. Then I found this garden spot. They said you're in Laplace. Laplace? How'd I swim out here? I said, now please tell me when you think that I can turn left, my friend. Because I'm trying to get back home to New Orleans. And he said, well, perhaps it's not yet on our parish map. But AAA, they could find you the ways and means. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue. I ended up in Prairieville. At Sorrento, I figured somebody should know, so I inquired there at Guidry's Grill. And Guidry said, I think you take a left turn when you see the sun done set. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue. I spent the night in Lafayette. Oh, I'm scared to death. Maybe there just ain't none of them left turns left. It's a U-turn sign. That's what I really need. Now, the State Patrol recalled he saw a left just before Lake Charles. He led the way, and then he cited me for speed. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue, and I ended up in Phil Platt. I found I-10. I got home again, but I didn't get no welcome mat. My wife won't believe my story. She packed my bags and she shook her head. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue, and my wife left me instead. Here's old what's his name? Yeah, you know, Sam used to do a lot of stuff on that Jack on that Bob Ruby show.
Okay, yeah that's sometimes you bring up a name like that. I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah.
Bob Ruby show.
Yeah, you know? And Bob actually wrote a nice little biography.
Listen to WAMF FM New Orleans 90.3 on your radio dial.
This program is produced by WAMF 90.3 FM in New Orleans, Louisiana, and distributed by Affiliated Media Foundation Movement to our sister stations WDSV 91.9 FM in Greenville, Mississippi, and KABF 88.3 FM in Little Rock, Arkansas. For more information, please visit our website at affiliatedmediamovement.org.